and Education Workforce Development come to order. We've got hearings and work sessions, possible work sessions scheduled on Senate Bill 1566, Senate Bill 1555, and Senate Bill 1554, and we'll take them up in order. I'd like to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1566. If you could give us a summary, Administrator Cox and Senator Courtney, if you could come up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1566 requires the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries to maintain a website that identifies the seismic risk category for every K-12 school, requires the school district and school performance report card produced by the Superintendent of Public Instruction to include information on assessing seismic risk category information on the website maintained by the department, requires school districts and education service districts to provide the department with information that could cause the department to reassess the seismic risk category of a school.
Mr. Chair, can we just vote yes and get it over with?
Senator Courtney, we have Senate Bill 1566 with an amendment.
It was just a clarification.
If you could give us a... Thank you for joining us today.
Am I supposed to speak now? You're supposed to say. You're supposed to address me and say...
I thought I ask you to address the bill and the amendment, please. And don't forget to identify yourself for the record.
Some people forget.
My name is Peter Corkin. I live at 2925 Island View Drive, Northeast Salem 97303. I'm a state senator, District 11, which includes where we're sitting, as well as other major portions of Salem, Jervis, and Woodburn. This is about the big one, the quake. And I'll just make an opening. Did you hand out the...
Yes, sir.
You should, and they distributed already?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. See, you don't do that. Watch this technique. You should listen to me before you read anything. It's about me, and then I'll let you read. So, way back in 1999, somebody asked me to be on OSPAC. I don't know what the letters mean, but it involved Department of Geology and Minerals, etc. And it's because we had failed and failed and failed to deal with what some expert were saying was a significant threat from the earthquake. And there was a person who came into my life that time named Senator Gary George. And it was interesting because if you know anything about Senator Gary George and Senator Peter Courtney, we do not have much in common in terms of our political philosophies. But we found each other and we started to bring legislation and things to the state senate together about the necessity of dealing what we have been led to believe by geologists, geotechnical engineers, as well as those types of people. My background is totally social scientist. I don't do natural or physical science. I don't have that expertise. But they put me on this OSPAC thing, and they said something happened back in 1700, which was a few years ago, at 9 o'clock at night on January 26th. An earthquake well in excess of 9 hit Oregon. And not only did it hit Oregon, it was so fierce that it also hit Japan later on in some connection. Now, you may not believe that because you weren't here, but they even would show how it was accidentally discovered by one of these experts as he was out in a canoe or something looking at the landscape from the ocean end, and how it completely redid a lot of the landscaping that you think of in Oregon all the way up to Columbia Gorge. Literally, the power of this thing, literally, we see it now and we say it's beautiful, but it was shaped by the power of that. And they discovered this zone just off our shore, which is still there. What they also discovered from a worldwide perspective in studying this thing, it is going to hit again. It is going to hit. And in fact, it's been over 300 years. There is the belief we're overdue. And while I'm old, as you know, and I may be gone in 24 hours to make most of you happy, the fact is there are younger people here that are living in Oregon. So he and I started to work And we put a ballot measure on in November of 2002, which surprisingly passed, because everything else was failing that night. It said the state could spend up to, I think it was a $1 billion, which really is very cheap, in bonding authority to redo schools, fire stations, police stations, and hospitals. Why? Because when one of these things hits, first of all, you want to protect the schools for obvious reasons. And who are you going to need when one of these catastrophes hit? You're going to need your police and your fire and your hospitals. And it was considered a very, very interesting idea, and even California started to study it, said, what do they do? And the people that night said, yes, you can do that. And I, at the time, as you know, I was in the hospital near death, and I wasn't even conscious when the vote was taken. And it's, they said yes to it. And yet, sadly, and this is where I'll get into trouble with our emergency services people, with all kinds of other people, we've spent some of the money with studies to at least study our schools, decide which one of the schools are threatened. Because you do understand that if this thing hits in the daytime when those schools are occupied and you have a vulnerable school, you do know what's going to happen. Witness China. You're going to have children. They're going to take many days to die. Their bodies will be broken. Many will be in the dark. So we are concerned. All this little bill does, because I've tried to move the ball ahead inch by inch, and I really miss, don't take this, whoever, Larry, don't take this wrong. He was such a compatriot, a brother of mine, in this, Gary George, and I've often felt alone since then in trying to constantly pound and pound to get us there, at least spend the money. All this thing does now is that apparently, right now, schools have to say things like, you have to inform your people online about, where's the thing here?
Current
test scores and things of that nature. This simply would say that same thing will now be done for the schools, which means you take your daughter or your son to a given school, you can go online and at least find the earthquake rating of the school, so you know. And we know the schools that need help. The Department of Education is going to oppose the bill. Doug Army is going to oppose the bill. And if you don't think you can move it, I can accept that. I mean, I didn't come here for a power play. I was even surprised the good Senator Mark Hass heard the bill. I think it's a very nice piece of legislation, but I don't want to make you, don't take this wrong. I'm not down here beating anybody up. I just know what's going to happen. The only thing wrong with kids are adults. And because otherwise, we would have spent all this money by now, and we would have been darn sure that at least these schools were safe. Because I tell you, I don't want kids killed in these schools. And I don't know, I've never heard of an earthquake 9.3. Now, recently worldwide, we're getting earthquakes in the 8s, and it's terrifying in terms of how long you shake, the jelly. I mean, the earth gets, and a tsunami is beyond description, just beyond description. So, you know, you take Walport. The one thing I like, everybody likes to laugh at Walport. I love Walport. It's probably one of my most favorite places. It's interesting about Walport. If you go to Walport, we used to take our little boys down there and camp and live there, and now the boys are grown. But it's fascinating because I used to jog up a certain road called Wakanda Beach Road, and I know a lot of you find it hard to believe that I could jog anywhere given my body and my shape. But the fact is, there was a dump up at the top. Next thing I know, the grade school that was on the flats there, they built it up there. Then the middle school is up there, and then the high school is still on the flats there, as you know, at Walport. But all the playing fields are up there, and soon they'll move that high school up there, because at least they've had the foresight to know when the tsunami hits Walport, if you drive through there, that's all going to be gone. It will be gone. Gone. I mean, it's not that I'm being exaggerating this. So all I want to do here is to make sure that you know, or whoever knows, our citizenry knows, what is ranking of their schools in terms of the earthquake preparedness. That's all it does. But I'm sure the cost of it, I don't know, do we have a lot of cost here or what? Mm-hmm. We think there's not going to be, but I don't know what Dagami's going to say, Department of Ed. So no pressure here, Mr. Chair, or members of the Education Committee. I'm sincere about that. I'll live with whatever you individually, collectively want to do, and I'm very sincere about that. This is not complicated stuff. It's all I can get done now, if I can even get this done. Do you understand what I said to you, Chair Hass?
Yes, sir. I do. Thank you. Don't worry. No pressure taken. We have a fiscal report that says there's a minimal cost to this.
I don't know what that means. I don't know what it means. I don't know.
Not mud.
It means that DeGamy is practically going to pay us to pass this bill.
I don't know if they like it or not.
I do have a question, though, on the information that would go on this. It says assessments of what a school or building is seismic. If this school or building hasn't been assessed, there's no requirement that all these schools be assessed. And if it hasn't been assessed, so that's just the latest information, right? Is that right?
That's correct.
Senator George?
I appreciate Senator Courtney working with the good Senator George. Actually, different district. That was represented about now by Senator Boquist. So if you feel like there's no common, you got to go with that district. He represented the Oregon Coast. My first year at the Capitol, Senator Courtney put me on emergency preparedness. Mm-hmm. And that was the scariest set of testimony I'd ever heard, when you sat through and listened to what the Oregon Coast face when this earthquake does happen. And it's not if, it's does. It will happen. And as we saw in Chile, and as we saw in New Zealand, and as we saw in Japan, this is a scary future that we have for sure, and it's coming. So I applaud you, Senator, for bringing it forward. And I'm sorry if you feel like I haven't been there enough, but I will be there today.
Okay. And to the dash ones, just some technical changes.
Could I ask Ryan Mann, my policy person who's worked hand in hand with me on this, to explain the dash one amendments, please, Chair Hass? Can I ask him to?
Please.
He said you could.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, my name is Ryan Mann, policy advisor, the Senate president. The dash one amendment was to make two clarifications in the bill. The first, on page 2, line 9, we'd originally said every school, and there was some concern that that would imply private schools and schools that hadn't been under the purview of DeGamy. This was intended to clarify that we're just talking about the schools that have already been inspected after the 2002 ballot measure, and that we're not bringing any new schools in to the inspection regime. So that was just one clarification. The second clarification was on page 3. We just wanted to clarify that the school districts don't need to notify the department every time they put in a new light fixture or replace a window. It was just if they made a significant change, an upgrade, or if they built a new facility so the database could be changed to reflect that their seismic rating is probably improved. So we just wanted to be more specific that the school districts don't need to be notifying the department every time they make a change, but it's just significant changes that would affect their seismic score.
Thank you. Further questions? Okay, gentlemen.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Mickey McConnell from DeGamy. Mike Caldwell and Autumn Wilburn, why don't you all come up?
Thank you, Chair Haas and committee members. For the record, my name is Vicki McConnell, and I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, known as DeGamy, our shortcut name. I want to thank the senator for introducing this bill. I applaud his continuing efforts to keep us all aware of this, one of the major geological hazards that we face here. And we've done a lot of good work through the years, but it is a slow push up the hill sometimes. We certainly do not oppose the bill. I do want to give you a little further background, if I may, as where we went from 2002 to the present with the work that has been done. After the ballot measures were passed that actually allowed for there to be governmental geo bonds that would be available for seismic rehabilitation, in 2005 there was a bill, Senate Bill 2 was passed, that mandated the agency to go out and get our arms around what exactly do we mean by seismic vulnerabilities of the schools, public schools, and the emergency facilities. So we did that. We did a seismic vulnerability study of public schools and emergency facilities using a rapid visual screening method that report and data and information were submitted back to the legislature in 2007, and that has become the base of the information that schools and emergency facilities use when they are applying for seismic rehabilitation grant program funds, which OEM, Office of Emergency Management, administers that grant program. So that allows them to be able to say, yes, we do have an issue, we have been ranked, we've done it, and then they do a little bit of further work, they get a structural engineer to come in and look and say, what does need to be done to rehabilitate the school? Is there a benefit cost to doing that, or is it not? And then they apply for these grant funds. So since 2007, we have maintained on our website all of the data and information from that original study, and you can get to it from our front page of our website. You can get through it through the Department of Education. You can get to it through Office of Emergency Management, and we are happy to continue to maintain that website on our, that specific website that we have. And as new data are given to us through the school districts and the special districts, we will periodically then take all those data and put them up on the website and post a notice that there's new information that would be available. And it's my understanding that the Department of Ed, through this this annual reporting on their schools, they will have on the report card a link to where you go on our website so that you can easily just go to that to find information about schools. And all the reports and databases are right there. So we're happy to continue doing that work.
Okay.
And I'm happy to answer any further questions.
You're saying for the most part you do a lot of this already.
That's correct. Really, Chair Haas and committee members, it's really making sure that the updates are, that there's notice that there have been, because some schools have gone through the grant program and have made changes. So it would be good to have that information available for parents to know that.
Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Really quickly, let me just clarify. The information that's available on your website right now, is it available in a searchable format that would make it easy for parents to find this information, or is it as part of longer PDF reports, for example, that might make it a little trickier for people inexperienced with the system to find it?
Chair Haas and committee members and Senator Steiner Hayward, we have it in a variety of forms. We have the full report. We have the full database. We have it searchable by school districts. We have it searchable by counties. Pretty easy to find the info. And there's a detailed description of what the ratings mean and how they rank.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Military Department and the interim head of OEM, and for short, we call it OEM. I just came to you today. I have no position on the bill, but I wanted to kind of give you a brief update on what has gone on since Senator Courtney first moved this into the forefront and we started the program. Currently, there are 17, and I passed out a sheet for you to show you, 17 educational institutions and 18 emergency services institutions have sought grants for $22.5 million worth of bonds that have been sold and added them into their project. Only one of those actually declined at the end of the day for a small grant of $76,000 because of the overall cost of their construction project. They curtailed it, so therefore they didn't need it. Currently, we're in the process. We will late spring be offering up another $7.5 million worth of bonding. And the list, that tentative award is what it's called on the sheet that I've handed out. And essentially, those have already been screened, and they have conditional grants depending on when the money arrives and so forth and how we can get it out. And those are the ones that have been selected. As I understand it from the group, this committee that's been working several years now to come up with the refinement on how to disperse this money, there's somewhere in the neighborhood roughly of $1 billion worth of need out there right now in the school system alone, not counting the emergency services, fire halls, police departments, et cetera, emergency operations centers. So there's roughly about $1 billion worth of need out there that we're chipping away at little by little. Typically, you'll find that these monies are put into projects that are already being done. They're already on the planning docket that have been passed by the voters at the local level, and they're going to do this work anyway. So not this work, but they're going to do a remodel, and this helps them get to where they need to go, some sort of remodel of an existing school. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have on the operation of the grant program itself. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, Autumn Wilburn, Oregon Department of Education. I'd like to echo what Vicki from Dogami said, and that is that we do currently provide a link to the Dogami database of this information from the Department of Education's website. However, we are happy to add this to our school and district report card that gets publicized to bring some increased awareness to the seismic scores of schools. And I would be remiss if I did not say thank you to the Senate President and his staff for working with the department to ensure that this bill would work for us.
Questions? Questions of the bill? Questions of Dogami? My favorite state agency because of its... Okay.
Thank you.
Makes me feel like I want to kind of fold it up into little pieces.
All right, committee. We are in a public hearing. I'm going to close the public hearing, and I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 1566. Senator Morris, we have a -1 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 1566, dated 2/2/12.
Senator Morris moves to adopt the -1 amendments, dated 2/12/12. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1566 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 1566 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the measure is passed. We'll go to the floor of the Oregon Senate with a due pass recommendation, and we'll ask Senator Courtney to carry the bill. Close the work session on Senate Bill 1566, and we are going to stay in order here and open up a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 1555. If you could give us a summary, Administrator Fox and Senator Berger and Senator Atkinson, if you wanted to join in. Cyberbullying.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1555 requires school employees to report acts of harassment, intimidation, bullying, and cyberbullying, and allows remedial action for failure to report. Requires policy prohibiting such acts to allow students and volunteers to make reports voluntarily and anonymously.
Senator Berger.
Thank you, Chair Haas and members of the committee. I'm Joanne Berger, and I represent District 5, Senate District on the Oregon coast. You have my testimony in front of you. Also, you saw this bill in the last session. This bill actually went out of the Senate unanimously. Today, it is about cyberbullying, and this morning you heard a very strong testimony from President Courtney about the threat of life to our children in school and being in these tsunami zones and in poorly built school buildings. It's really a shame. I want to talk to you a little bit about the threat of the quality of life of our students, and that is cyberbullying. This bill has been vetted very well. It will conform to the model policy of the Oregon School Board Association. And today I have in the audience students from Lincoln High School who have done some incredible work. And also with them, Mr. Jim Hansen from Lincoln High School. He is the school psychologist. And you'll hear the first testimony from one of the people that is most impacted by cyberbullying. I'm not going to be bullied. Who's going to be bullied are our children. And so today I have with me Madeline Klingel from Lake Ridge High School. And I'm going to turn it over to Senator Atkinson first, and then we'll hear from Madeline. Thank you, Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jason Atkinson, State Senator from Southern Oregon. I'm also a board member of a national organization called the Protectors, which seeks to train kids on a national curriculum not to be bystanders, but to be what we call side standers to people who are experiencing bullying. The executive director was here the last time that Senator Verger had this bill, and many of you may recall a term that he used called bullycide, which was suicide at the end of being bullied. Obviously, neither one of us before us and in this hearing want to get into the horrible specifics that we can all recite almost on a monthly basis, if not on a weekly basis. But just to bring home the point of how this works in today's culture, Senator Hass, Senator George, Senator Morris, and Senator Beyer, I have just bullied you by way of text message as I came up here. And Senator Steiner Hayward, it's your free pass today because I don't have your cell phone in my phone. But really what we're talking about in this bill is what I just did somewhat jokingly, to the members, and having that happen on a repeated basis in a very small community, which is a school, and having it in essentially, and I don't mean this demeaning in any way, but in a very small world that a lot of folks live in when they are in junior high school, which I think Senator Verger would join me in saying is some of the most difficult times in human beings' lives is when they're in middle school or in junior high school, as they used to call it way back when I was a kid. The fact of the matter is that bullying today is now much like what we see in the public space as anonymous. And yes, we have all learned to pay attention or not pay attention to comments on the news section of various newspaper articles or in blogs. But when you're in junior high school and your whole world is surrounded by Facebook friends and your world is really the size of a student body, it's very hard to live past what could be bullying taken to a wrong level. And so with that, it is my privilege to always stand with the wonderful Senator Verger. I was going to say the institution of public service from Coos Bay, but I'm delighted to be here. I've been delighted to answer any questions, but I really do, just by way of the text message that I sent you, really that's what we're talking about, and we're talking about it at when people are very vulnerable at their developmental ages, which is difficult. So I'd be delighted to answer any questions or hand it to the rest of our panel.
For the record, Senator Atkinson texted us a message that said, "Vote. If you don't vote for this, you can't have any of my tater tots."
I'd be more worried that we can't have any of this coffee.
Mr. Chair, and I responded. A mole fly would do. And that's an inside deal.
Yes.
I'm more worried about the coffee.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Madeline Klingle. I am 15 years old, and I'm currently a freshman at Lake Ridge High School in Lake Oswego, Oregon. I am testifying in support of Senate Bill 1555. I've been a victim of bullying, and that's why I support this bill. First, I'm going to tell you about my experience with bullying as of last year. Some rumors were started about me around the beginning of my eighth grade year. These rumors gave others an excuse to bully me. At school, I was talked about, made fun of, and shunned. There was one girl in particular that was out to get me for reasons unknown. She and her band of loyal followers took it upon themselves to make my life a living hell. She used her popularity to turn people against me. Although her followers did a lot of the dirty work, she called me names in the hallways and got me uninvited from my own friends' parties. If I sat down at a table where she and her friends were also sitting, they would all stand up and leave. She was relentless. I was also bullied on social networking sites such as Facebook and Formspring. Formspring is a social question and answer website that allows its users to ask other people questions anonymously. The problem with websites like Formspring is that they have opened the door for harassment and bullying due to the anonymity of the entries. I had a FormSpring account, and I received hundreds of cruel anonymous questions and comments. I would now like to share with you just a very small sampling of the comments I received. I like lowering your self-esteem. You have no right to live. I hope you kill yourself and go to hell. It's what you deserve. You seem to be taking all of this hating personally, Madeline. And I mean, you should. People really dislike you, but it's your fault. You make people not like you. I'm going to hide behind the anonymous button because I hate you. You seem to have this idea that everyone likes you, but really no one does. You will never, ever be popular. You're the most hated person at our school. I can't wait for the day you get pregnant by some...
Would you like to just kind of summarize the rest of yours? I think Chair Hass, that I asked Madeline if she would like to summarize, and I don't think that she wants to do that. So what we'll do now is we're going to move on to Mr. Hansen and his group, who have now actually addressed this issue and maybe have come up with something that's going to be good. So, Madeline, let's step back, and we'll let you see maybe later.
Madam, very much thank you for having the courage to come up here and tell your story.
Thanks.
Good afternoon.
He's got
all right. Chair Hass, members of the committee, my name is Ariana Trams, and I am one of the leaders of Lincoln High School's anti-bullying campaign. Our address is 1600 Southwest Salmon Street, Portland, Oregon, 97205. These are my friends and fellow leadership class members, Max Lehman and Alexis Taylor. Lincoln's students went to Salem in 2008 to campaign for Oregon's stronger anti-bullying bill. Since 2008, we have attempted to show that bullying is a problem not only at Lincoln High School, but in our city, in our state, and in our world. As a class, we have taken steps to give students the knowledge and tools to fight bullying against people of different sexes, races, creeds, abilities, and sexual orientations. We support Senate Bill 1555 and urge you to make it law.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, my name is Alexis Taylor. As the first generation to deal with social networking, we see it as our duty to address cyberbullying. Having more specific laws and procedures to report cyberbullying will raise teacher and student awareness of the damages that it causes. According to the 2011 Oregon Healthy Teen Survey, 27% of Oregon teens reported being harassed in the past 30 days. Senate Bill 1555 provides a long-term legal mandate that is a necessary foundation to our student and teacher efforts to stop bullying. Research demonstrates that school districts that have anti-bullying policies have fewer instances.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, my name is Max Lehman. Under the law, every student is entitled to learn in a safe environment, and we are passionate about creating this ideal. Senate Bill 1555 would raise awareness and challenge the myth that bullying is just a part of life. We support public postings of anti-bullying laws at our school. We will talk about the stronger laws during our Lincoln anti-bullying presentations. Our fellow students' knowledge of the law will be important when we train them how to respond effectively to hateful actions and speech. To close, we would like to share with you a written reflection from Lincoln students regarding the effectiveness of using law and education to improve school climate.
I think that it is really great that Lincoln has an anti-bullying program. It makes Lincoln a better place. I'd never really been bullied until this year, and it's tough. I didn't know what to do in this situation. I know that I'm not the only one who has experienced this. Now I feel like Lincoln is actually doing something and succeeding. I honestly want to do something to prevent bullying. Thank you.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I may request some information from you, but also from the co-sponsors of this bill. First of all, thank you. I think this is critically important proposed legislation, and overall, I very much support it. And I thank all of you. I thank Madeline for your courage and for your
See, I'm a parent who's been through this with one of my kids, so I get it. Yeah, I've had some that on my end, right? It's not the first nor the last time you're going to see me tear up in this body. My concern, reading over the law as it currently stands and with the proposed changes affected by this bill, is that I don't see anything in here that makes it clear that the policy really allows school officials to do anything about cyberbullying in particular, because an earlier part of the law talks about things that are happening related to behavior at school-sponsored activities. This is page 1, line 15 and 16. Applies to behavior at school-sponsored activities on schools-provided transportation and at any official school bus stop. And I'm a little concerned that the proposed changes don't actually go far enough, because although it includes cyberbullying, it's unclear to me whether by current statute that would allow them to take action against something that happens on something like FormSpring or Facebook. And I wonder if somebody could help clarify that issue for me.
Wherever it happens.
Senator Verger, can you come up here for to address that? And I think I do have another question for you.
Actually, when you are working on any bill, as all of you know, it's a compromise. And we had many people within the system that did not even approve of mandated reporting. So we had, if you know of this, you must report it. In this case, it would go to the school officials. However, that official, that principal, that superintendent, then would decide and determine if there was a serious enough issue to take it further than that. And I think that the bill is would be very nice if it could go further to really stop it. But I like the idea that the students have come up with themselves, that it's a combination of the law and education, and that their experience with this has been that where you have education, which they have been doing in all of their classes, that it does go down. But that's the reason that the bill is the way it's written. So thank you for the question.
Thank you,
Senator Verger. If you could just kind of stand by, sir. If you we could hear your testimony then.
Yes.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, my name is Jim Hansen, and I'm the proud school psychologist of these three and 1,400 other Lincoln High School students in Portland, Oregon. I'm a past president of the Oregon School Psychologists Association, and I'll also be representing the Oregon Safe Schools and Communities Coalition today. For the record, our address is 25 Northwest, 23rd Place, number 6, Portland, Oregon. Both of our organizations do support an enhanced bullying bill that includes cyberbullying. I've given you some statistics in my written testimony that talks about the seriousness of cyberbullying and how this bill might be a first step in addressing some of those concerns. What we're finding is that cyberbullying is even more hurtful and damaging to kids than face-to-face bullying. And as you've heard today, these damages that can be done are not only at high school, they can be later on throughout a child's entire life. So right now really is the time to address our culture within the schools. We know that schools can be effective in preventing cyberbullying. We know from research that if schools have anti-bullying policies that are based on state law, that we have fewer instances of bullying. We also know, as Senator Verger has spoken to you, that when we have an effective mechanism for reporting that cyberbullying that allows our administrators to follow through, that staff will make those reports more easily. They will have more confidence in their school officials. So we do hope to see this bill pass. Just to let you know, we're working on this nationally as well. The National Association of School Psychologists right now is urging the United States Congress to pass House Resolution 4530, the Student Non-Discrimination Act, and Senate Bill 506H, the Safe Schools Improvement Act, right now 45 state laws direct school districts to adopt anti-bullying policy, and 36 states now have provisions that do include prohibition of cyberbullying or bullying using electronic media. And that's from the U.S. Department of Education, 2011. Just to let you know, as you've heard from our Lincoln High School students, this is really a first step. Having a law like this is great. It's where we need to start. Peers can have an amazing influence on school climate and behavior. And it's been my privilege to work with these three and other of our student leadership team members over the course of the past 3 years, and with new clubs that have been forming at Lincoln and maybe forming other places. We have two representatives from our Taboo Anti-Bullying Club here with us today as well. We do take this really seriously, both as staff and as students, and we know that something really can be done. So we would urge you to pass Senate Bill 1555, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing this group together and helping us out. Questions for Mr. Hansen?
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, kids, for coming up. Just so everyone, Senator Bircher, can you come back up here? Senator Boquist, are you on 1566?
No, I'm on the other
one. You're on the next one, okay. You're on deck. This committee spent a great deal of time with this bill last session and then passed it out. This version of the bill here, we had a number of amendments to it, and this version that we have in front of us is the bill with those amendments and changes that
yes.
went through the House. I just want to make sure that is clear.
Yes.
Okay.
One thing that has not, I don't think has been mentioned, and I need to mention it, and that is that, you know, we have to provide education. That's the state law. We also need to provide a safe school environment. And so when this is allowed to this extent, and particularly where it takes someone's life, then we are not doing the job that we need to do. And so I think that it's a very serious bill, and I would greatly appreciate the committee taking it further. The Senate took it off the floor the last time unanimously, and unfortunately it got to the House, and along with many other bills at the end of sine die, did not go into law. So,
well, I appreciate your work on this, and I remember going through this with a number of changes within Senator Bonamici and her trained eye to detail, and I appreciate you moving back from requiring volunteers in schools to be
yes.
actually mandatory reporters, and I think that's
yes.
a reasonable and practical change
well,
to this.
Good. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, committee, I happen to have it on good authority that all of you voted for this in the last session, and it's the identical bill, and we're in a work session on this.
Do we have a fiscal, Mr. Chair? I don't see that in my file.
Minimal.
Okay.
Nominal. It's minimal, not nominal.
Minimal. Are you ready, Mr. Chair?
Ready.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1555 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Morse moves Senate Bill 1555 to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion? Is there any objection? Okay. Senate Bill 1555 moves to the Oregon State Senate with a do-pass recommendation. Senator Bircher will be the carrier.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. So we will open up a public hearing and work session for Senate Bill 1554. If you could give us a summary, Administrator Cox, and we have a couple of senators here, Boquist and Bircher, and Atkinson back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Senate Bill 1554 requires instruction in Oregon studies in middle school and is effective July 1, 2013.
Senator Virgil, welcome to the committee.
Chair Hess and members of the committee, Senate Bill 1554, I'm Joanne Verger from Senate District 5 on the Oregon coast. You have before me my testimony on this particular bill. Senate Bill 1554 is about Oregon studies. It actually came from my experience, personal experience, in going into the schools and in talking to classrooms and finding out that our students just simply did not know very much about Oregon history. At the time, I started working with the Department of Ed about the curriculum. That was my first choice, was that this curriculum be put into the middle school. At that time, it was two sessions ago, I was assured that they were working on putting the curriculum into Oregon schools, not necessarily the middle school. At the present time, it's taught in the fourth grade, but it's left to the teachers as to just exactly how they teach it. You can have a play, you can have a little skit, or you can, in some cases, have the students tell you what they're going to put on the covered wagons when they come west, but it is not a full curriculum, nor does it go on for a semester. This particular bill is moving civics and geography and history, the social studies, to the middle school, where young people would have a lot better chance of remembering it. Also, in understanding the sacrifice that the pioneers made when they came to this absolutely beautiful, beautiful state. Throughout the last few years, we have emphasized at the federal level math and science, math and science, math and science. And social studies has really been pushed aside, and the Department of Education would agree with that. The next session, the curriculum still was not in the schools. And so I had a meeting with the superintendent and with the curriculum director, and I told them that I was not going to wait any longer, but that I was going to put the bill in. The pushback that you will probably hear today is the mandated. In other words, you have to teach social studies in middle school for two semesters. And I will tell you that I would have been just as happy to have not been here and been able to say we don't need this bill. We have social studies and Oregon history back in. I graduated from high school in the state of Louisiana, where you are absolutely required to know your state history. And in doing the research for this bill, we found that many, many states have that same attitude about their history. And so now I have with me two distinguished senators who would like to give some support, I hope, to this bill. So thank you, Chair Hess.
Thank you.
For the record, Senator Jason Atkinson, representing Southern Oregon. Distinguished members of the committee, shall I call you all keepers of the land of the empire builders, land of the setting sun? If you do not know all of those words, you need to take this course. I'm very delighted to speak on behalf of this on the eve of our birthday tomorrow. It's the 33rd state. Us and that other state, Arizona, came in on Valentine's Day. We have a very, very rich history that I have fallen in love with many times over. But my affection for United States history began when, in the first grade, I was a slow reader. And my parents switched schools. And they switched me to Mrs. Sheik's class. And Mrs. Sheik, there was one class in her class, second grade, which was the reader's class. And Mrs. Sheik was married to Mr. Sheik. And Mr. Sheik was the principal of that little school. And now in the second grade, you know about your parents, and you know about God, and you've heard, at least theoretically, about a thing called the Trinity. But if there's a fourth member of the Trinity in my life, it is, to this day, Mr. Sheik. I hold this man in utmost reverence. Between second and third, between third and fourth, fifth and sixth, all these grades, they would visit Civil War battlefields and send me postcards. As if the Lord himself was sending me postcards, I got postcards and fell in love with history because of Mr. Sheik. So it is with that particular affection that I bring to you my absolute support for this bill and affection for Senator Verger. I think it's imperative that children understand the rich history that we have, the independent nature that we have, and fall in love with what is very uniquely American, which is American history, or Oregon history. I spoke, historically speaking, made some historical comments last Saturday night about Abraham Lincoln, the 16th president, who was nearly the first territorial governor of Oregon, except there was no Macy's and his wife Mary Todd didn't want to move here. You may not know that whole story, but that's a very true story. And the list goes on and on, and my poor son has had to suffer through all of them. I will leave you with my absolute support of the bill. We've already talked through the bill as it was last session, but I do think it's important. I do think that this is the right time. It certainly has made an impression and shaped my life, falling in love with history in the same target age that this bill is aiming towards. But I will leave you with one very small story, and that is this. My little second grade teacher this last summer, I had heard was falling on, was having some difficulties in her health. And it worried me because these people, Mr. and Mrs. Sheik, are without question, some of the pillars in my life. And so my little son, then 8, and I were going to go on a man road trip. And we were going to make our way and spend an afternoon with the Sheiks. And so we went and we saw my second grade teacher and her very strong, devoted husband, Mr. Sheik, who, when he speaks out of reverence, is really the voice of the Lord. And so, Mr. Sheik, I told my son how well he was going to behave and how interested he was going to ask, and I bribed him with Sonic drive-thru as a way to get him to be a gentleman, which wasn't that hard. And for 2 hours, Mr. Sheik gave my son, then 8, now and me, not 8, a lecture on the importance of General MacArthur and his association with General MacArthur. And I sit there in absolute reverence and watched my son be fascinated with the storytelling that Mr. Sheik, it didn't even cost me the Sonic. Several months later, I found myself in an audience in the embassy in Tokyo, where General MacArthur, after the war, set up rebuilding of Japan and set up office in this one building that he made sure was not bombed. And if you know that story, there's a very, Senator Boquist knows this picture, a picture of the Imperial King taking the surrender, taking actually the signature and coming before MacArthur and bowing. I stood in that exact spot and had someone with a camera phone take a picture of Stephanie and I in that exact spot. I thought I'd send it to Mr. Sheik. The ambassador came over and he said, "What are you doing?" I told him, "Do you have a booklet by chance that can explain this?" He says, "Sure." So off we went into this very back room kind of thing, and he gave me a booklet, and I had the ambassador sign it to Mr. and Mrs. Sheik. "Next time you're in Japan, please come by and see the embassy." And I sent it to them. And I want you to know that I'm a better man for what happened to me in middle school, falling in love with history, and passing that on to a scrawny 8-year-old who happens to be my son. You never know the imagination that this social studies will ignite in young people. And I would urge you to highly not only protect Oregon history, but to allow other kids to experience what I have.
Senator Boquist. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Senator Brian Boquist, 12th Senate District, five rural portions of five counties today. And I saw on CNN recently, which I don't watch very often, but I did see it right there. They were doing some something about U.S. history and things that were going on in Washington, D.C., and a third of the students in the United States could identify who the correct president was today. Congress hasn't passed a budget in 1,000 days, and so therefore we're borrowing 40 cents on the dollar. My point is we have U.S. history all the time, and we can't fix Washington, D.C., and most of us know this doom back there, whether it's a Democrat or Republican. But we in this legislature, several years ago, the good senator here brought up the issue of Oregon studies, and I thought, okay, I'm sitting here on the floor. Senator Shields' bill is going to be killed for the third time, I guess, and so I'll get something to read, and I pulled the Oregon Blue Book out here. And I think this is important because when I started reading the Oregon Blue Book, I said, we did that in the 05 session. We did that in the 07 session. We did that in the 09 session, and it didn't work, and here we are in 2011. I would agree with Senator Verger. Fourth grade is not the place to study Oregon history, because if you study Oregon history, you'll find a lot of solutions that could be implemented in this building right here. And I want to give you a few examples and a few tidbits right out of our own Oregon Blue Book, and you can blame Kate Brown if you don't like revisionist history, but it's not. It's, in fact, history that I think every legislator ought to know. There's one little tidbit in here that says Oswald West, who was the governor, gave his full authority to his secretary, Fern Hobbs, and sent her with members of the National Guard to Copperfield, a notorious boomtown in a railroad Baker County, with a declaration of martial law on January 1, 1914. She closed all the saloons and houses and left the guardsmen to monitor the situation. When's the last time we called out the National Guard here to do such a thing? Shortly thereafter, the book says, this is the book, alienated, fearful, and distrustful of the establishment, some workers gravitated towards the socialist and militant labor unions. Interestingly enough, down in your area, Madam Senator, then IWA organizer Wesley Everett was deported in similar fashion from Coos Bay, and he went to Centralia, Washington to promote the union. In 1919, he was seized by a mob, castrated, and hanged from a railroad bridge. This is Oregon history that people don't really think too much about. Interestingly enough, at the same time, the federal government, to counter the growth of labor unions, the socialist part of the federal government took control of all spruce and timber production in the state of Oregon. It assumed responsibility for logging, lumbering, and filling orders, and in 1917, General DeKey took command of the troops who erected sawmills at Coquille and Toledo, Vancouver, and Port Gamble. This is one that looks like it's a newspaper article this week. World War I, of course, not there. Let's hope there's a World War III with Iran. But anyway, World War I was a mixed blessing for Oregon. Initially, it stimulated the economy with production of war materials, foodstuff, and ships, but it set the stage for the collapse of shipbuilding and the fall-off of lumber production in the 1920s. Sounds like last week. Everywhere, the signs of trouble. Few housing starts, instability in banking. I would agree with Senator Byers shaking the head right there. Speculation in the stock market and migration. More than 50,000 people left Oregon following these problems. Deja vu, and for the closing part of this this committee, because it's education committee, and a good thing that most people probably don't know, is that the wartime stress and emphasis on patriotism, distrust of German Americans, eugenics campaigns championed by, won't say names, anti-Catholic bigotry was fertile ground in Oregon for the rise of the American Protection Association, the Federal Patriotic Societies, and the Ku Klux Klan. Chapters of KKK formed in Tillamook, Medford, Eugene, cross burnings and everything else. The Klan, the Federal Patriotic Societies, again, this is the Blue Book, this is not me speaking, and the Scottish Rite Mason sponsored a bill, in the general election in 1922 that passed to compel all children to attend public schools. Interesting. It, of course, was overtly anti-Catholic. It was struck down by the Supreme Court, but the Ku Klux Klan found a strange champion in the Oregon legislature, Caspar K. Kubali, KKK, the Speaker of the House of Representatives here in Oregon, happened to possess the winning initials and became the rallying point for an effort for the Alien Property Act of 1923. The law prohibited Japanese from purchasing leasing land in Oregon, and the legislature also passed a law forbidding the wearing of sectarian clothing, namely priestly stuff and habit nuns in classrooms. If we just took this book out on the floor of the Oregon Senate and the Oregon House of Representatives and started looking at all the solutions that they've had in the past that have worked, have not worked, it'd make our job a lot easier. And obviously we should not be teaching it to fourth graders, we should be teaching it to eighth graders so that they can help us solve our future problems.
Thank you.
Senator Haas, this bill also passed the Senate in the last session and went to the House and was one of the bills that did not go through. Strongly supported, and before the you at that time, last session, Senator Johnson testified, and also co-speaker Roblin, and they both have are holding with their same position on the bill. I know that it is very hard with all of our that our teachers have to do, and I don't want to leave this table without saying how sympathetic I am to our teachers and how supportive I am of our teachers. They are required to be the nurse, the counselor, the teacher, the friend. Our expectations of them with growing classroom size, all kinds of problems in our schools. However, I do feel that we need to prioritize what we do in our schools. I do not want to add effort to them. I think this simply will be a curriculum that will be shifted to the middle school and worked into their program. And if you notice, it is as determined by the Board of Education. And so thank you so much for your attentiveness today and hearing our bill again. And I would ask that you please send it out again so that we can get more support this time.
Thank you, Senator Berger.
I don't know what dropped.
Thank you, Senators. We do have some people who have signed up to be heard on this. And committee members, you have a growing stack of letters here on this. Let me call up Shirley Lomax, Judith Lowry, and Karen Russ.
Do you want me to go first? Well, thank you, Chairman Haas, Vice Chair Morse, and other members of the Senate Education Committee for allowing me to testify before you today. My name is Shirley Lomax, and I'm not going to read everything, but I do need to read something because this is the first time I'm testifying before a legislative committee, so I apologize in advance for any faux pas or protocol mistakes I make. But I come to you today because I'm a retired school teacher from Salem Kaiser. I taught for over 30 years, about half elementary and half middle school. The last few years were middle school. And just like the folks who just spoke, I found passion in social science education. And as a result of teaching that, I have gotten involved with the Oregon Council for Social Studies, the National Council for Social Studies, and the Oregon Geographic Alliance to just kind of feed that. I love listening to the stories that they had. My particular passion is geography, but I've left the school district, but I presently teach a methods course for Western Oregon University and supervise student teachers who are in the elementary and middle schools. And I work with kids at North Salem, giving them counseling on what they should do after high school. And then my new passion is I babysit and teach my 5-month-old granddaughter about Oregon and the world, because that's why we're here, isn't it? I am here to testify in opposition to Senate Bill 1554, because what I find is, just like the passion you heard from those folks for social science, the only problem with those passions is there's never enough time to do what you need to, or enough money to spend on the things and the people and issues that come before those passions. And that's the issue that I take with Senate Bill 1554. It does not provide for the time or the money that schools need in order to act in accordance with this bill. When it comes it's my understanding that this comes to the school with no funding attached, and I know that in Salem-Keizer last year, they have made deep, deep cuts, and I'm not sure that there's any fund left untouched. When I look and I see that there are no longer librarians in the schools, in the middle or elementary schools, to me, I just can't imagine that. And to find, there will be money need to be found to purchase books, prepare, do the planning, write the curriculum, to implement it into the middle schools. And so that money will need to come from somewhere, and I fear where that will come from. And I think, is leaving Oregon studies out of our curriculum, quality education, and I think, hey, what am I thinking? I've worked on committees. I've worked with the Oregon Department of Ed, and I know the standards, and I know that in the standards, one of the things that I appreciate is it's woven in it, developmentally at first grade. There are things presented to help those little first graders develop a pride and an understanding of what it means to be in Oregon, and it goes throughout the grade levels. When I taught middle school, I focused on geography, and I really, there wasn't a day that I didn't compare the places in the world to Oregon. You have to have an understanding of where you're at before you can understand the world, and I fear that geography will be lost from the middle school, and we need to be developing those global citizens. I believe that two semesters of Oregon studies in isolation at middle school is not enough time to develop those fine citizens that Oregon deserves. Because I'm retired and I say yes to everything and no to nothing except sleep, and I would be more than eager in any ways to work with the authors of these bills to do what I can to make sure that the spirit of the bill is fulfilled by using the present standards we have. Right now, I work with the Oregon Geographic Alliance to provide free and services for teachers on Oregon. We have an Oregon Atlas, and we bring around an 18-by-20 map of Oregon to teach them how to use that and make that accessible. So there are those things out, and I would love to work with and share that even more. In closing, I just ask you to join me in opposing the bill because we do not have the money to fund it, and I believe it would be wasteful to spend additional time and money to develop a curriculum that is already in place in a more developmental, appropriate scope and sequence within the system that we have with the Oregon Social Sciences. So, I can breathe again. Thank you for listening and accepting my testimony.
Thank you.
I'll go again. Chair Hass, members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing me to testify today. My name is Karen Rouse, and I teach 7th and 8th grade language arts and social studies at West Sylvan Middle School in Portland, Oregon, and have done so for 12 years. I come with a passion for social studies, and I so appreciated the testimony of the three senators that preceded us about their passion for social studies, because that indeed is mine and why I teach. However, I have a different perspective than them. I come with urging my opposition to the bill. I recognize the well-intentioned nature of the bill. But I believe that SB 1554 is unnecessary, and I do believe that if it's passed, it would actually be harmful to our students. And here are my concerns. First, I believe it's unnecessary. As the final senator said to us, that the curriculum that he was outlining that was covered in the blue book, that's best for eighth grade. And I agree with him. That's why I integrate that part of Oregon history into U.S. history. That's where it belongs. When we teach eighth grade, we teach U.S. history. We're mandated to do so by Oregon law in the same statute that this bill is asking to amend. And the District of Portland Public Schools, has adopted a curriculum called Beyond the Oregon Trail, Oregon's Untold History, which requires that we integrate it into the teaching of U.S. history. This curriculum explores the history of racial injustice in Oregon. I also make sure that in eighth grade, I'm teaching about the government, the Oregon government. When we're looking at U.S. government, I compare it to Oregon government. Senator Hass, you might remember having met some of my students last spring when they came down. Then Senator Bonamici got to meet quite a few of her constituents as well. We do things like comparing the Oregon Bill of Rights to the Virginia Declaration of Rights on which it was originally based. So I do integrate it, and I believe that that's where it's best suited. In addition to teaching eighth grade, I have the distinct privilege of looping with my students from seventh to eighth grade. So in seventh grade, I get to teach medieval history. They've come from sixth grade where they've learned ancient civilizations. If the bit that I believe that would make mandating a 1 year of middle school be Oregon studies, why I believe that would be harmful is because if you mandate 1 year, then you must remove 1 year of something. And that would be something in social studies. So that would mean, because U.S. history is mandated, that would mean probably a semester of ancient civilizations would be removed and a semester of medieval history would be removed. And that's world history. And to close, I believe that instead of requiring a year-long class, it would be just in middle school. I agree with the Oregon Council for Social Studies position that it should be integrated throughout the years at developmentally appropriate ages. And that I believe that as a social studies teacher, it's my job to create citizens, not just citizens of Oregon, not just citizens of the United States, but citizens of our global community of the world. And that's what I strive to do. So thank you very much for hearing my testimony. And if you have any questions, I'd be delighted to answer them.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Judith Lowry, and I live in Silverton, and I taught in the Silverton School Districts forever and a day, and then retired and went back to work at Western Oregon. I teach early childhood elementary content pedagogy, social studies, and I also supervise and get to watch my students teach out in the field and with all their field experiences. I've had the privilege of having kindergarten pre-service folks all the way up to high school, actually, and throughout that time, then I've been able to also do a few other things. Since 1991, I've also been a teacher consultant for Oregon Geographic Alliance, been a member of OCSS, the Oregon Council for Social Studies, and past president of that, and worked nationally with the National Council for Geography Education, and then also for the National Council for Social Studies. I think one of the biggest and the most privileged times I've ever felt is when I've gotten a chance to work on this content standards for the state of Oregon, and then also to do textbook adoptions for social studies, and then also for reading. So a little bit about my background, but my passion lies with, and they've said everything I was going to say, so I have no idea why I'm here, but I'll proceed a little bit. The policy statement you have in front of you from Oregon Oregon Geographic Alliance is about that bit and piece of the Oregon studies. And I couldn't agree more with the people who have put together, with Senator Berger, who has put together this particular bill. Oregon studies does take a back seat. However, there is a lot of hope out there. I have 14 student teachers in my class right now who are out in the fields practicing, and out of those 14 students that I am supervising and have taught in class this term, or am teaching in this term, 10 of them are doing Oregon studies in a kindergarten class, a first, second grade split, third and fourth grade, and even in fifth grade. So There are Oregon studies, or Oregon is being taught, and the connections, I think that's the important part, and I'm glad you brought that up. When a little kindergarten person learns about his family, he's living in Oregon, so he's learning about how his family and the community that he lives in is also connected to the world around him, and it's little baby steps, but it's that scaffolding and that foundation that a continued curriculum is so important, that K through 12. By the time, as you said, by the time that they're in eighth grade, they're making huge global connections from Oregon to the world. But actually, when I taught sixth grade, I was teaching the Western Hemisphere, and Oregon was connected to its border countries, Canada, Mexico, the states of Mexico. So there was always that outreach. And I think when we've been working on the standards, we've been very careful to make sure that there is an Oregon connection K-12, and it is in place. And I couldn't agree more that if it was taken out and it was just singled as one study section, that connection that Oregon studies would be making would not be there. One of the things that I just would like to reiterate on the position paper that you have from Oregon Geographic is that we do definitely agree that Oregon students need a stronger grasp of Oregon studies. I am the product of a pioneer family. In fact, both sides, my grandmother and my grandfather, they settled in the Silverton Mount Angel area. I didn't get far from home. And so my passion has always been Oregon history. My family has the oldest continual family reunion west of the Mississippi. So I take a lot of pride in that. But we need to realize that social studies is four-pronged. It's economics, it's civics, it's history, and geography. And if it's taught...
And it's social science.
And social studies analysis, that's correct. And if it's taught in a tiny little two-semester, I think that those four strands would be misappropriated anyway. However, the mandate that teaching of all the Oregon Studies curriculum in a discrete time period, Oregon Geographic Alliance suggests that Oregon Studies include the thoughtful implementation of best practices incorporated across the K-12. And I think that's the bit, is that the implementation of teaching social studies, unfortunately, with No Child Left Behind, my students are the reason that they're teaching social studies right now out in the schools is because K-3, it isn't taught. And it isn't taught, and it isn't valued as much as the reading and math, because that's where our test scores are. Thank you so much for letting me speak today.
Well, thank you, ladies. It means a lot to hear what I would call real-life teachers to give us their input on education issues, and I also want to thank Sarah Siegel too for coming down last week to testify, and we had to bump her from the schedule, and she traveled from Hood River. I guess we're unanimous on the spirit, at least. I mean, if there's a common ground there, and it's just how to exactly incorporate that. Let me ask you all, if not this bill, and How would you then incorporate this spirit or this intent to perhaps do a better job than what's being done now?
What I find very discouraging is that standards are written, a lot of time is put in on them. Teachers from all over the state are brought in here to put together those standards. They're written, they're mandated by law to be taught, and yet when you go into the schools, you don't always see them being taught.
Why is that?
Time
and money. I think that those are the issues. There just is, and that's why I totally agree, but geography, it has to be integrated. And I think I think that's why it's important that at teacher education, we teach our upcoming teachers to learn how to integrate, to learn to use their time wisely. To me, I wish that there was a little more knuckle to making sure that everybody did adhere to the standards. I hate to say that we need a test, but I think that's why social studies loses out, because it's not a tested item, so it falls back. I talked with Gail Thiemann, who is with the National Council for Social Studies, last night, and they did a study about the state of social studies, and they found that in Oregon schools, social studies does get the third most time, but when they talked about what was important, it dropped to fifth place, so it knocks out. I left 1 year middle school to go teach at a small school, Fruitland, and I had decided I'm going to do my reading based off of social studies themes. I'm going to do my math, taking into consideration import, export sorts of things. And then when I got there, my principal said, no, you need, we just adopted these reading materials, you need to do this. About halfway through, they said, you need to teach your students how to prepare for the test on math. So all my great plans kind of went to the side. So reality and, I guess reality and real reality, time and money gets in the way.
And Senator Hass and members of the committee, I would also say time is two-pronged for teachers. One is time for curriculum development, which is significant. With a textbook, teaching something that is new might take 2, 3, 4 hours to prepare for that 1 hour of lesson. Without textbooks, without resources or materials, we're talking weeks of time that it would take for an individual teacher or hopefully groups of teachers could come together, but that's money and time, right? The other bit of time is within the classroom, because there are other things to teach, right? And teachers need to be taught how to then integrate. How do you integrate this or that? And I do want to give credit to the Classroom Law Project here. I imagine it's a nonprofit organization with which you are all quite familiar. They are the reason, they are the organization that got me to integrate Oregon government teaching into my teaching of U.S. history. They're who first got me down to the Capitol building, who got me to get my students here. But they develop curriculum they train then teachers to teach it. That's the kind of resource that we need in order to do an effective job of teaching.
Thank you. Senator Byard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, the irony of this whole thing is I'm not an Oregonian. I moved out here when I was early in high school. But the irony is when I moved here and my peer age group who grew up here, Oregon used to have an incredible, robust Oregon history teaching program. And frankly, I think through high school, I remember when I was there, and we're talking a long time ago, we used to have a very good civics program. What I find now among young people is that, in fact, my children's ages, you know, in the 20s and 30s, they seem to have missed most of that. They have virtually no knowledge of Oregon's history. And frankly, with the emphasis recently on math and science, they have almost no connection to how government works and how civics works. And as a result of that, I think we're seeing a fairly anti-government, anti-public funding system. It's just a little frustrating.
I think one of the things that, in my mind, that's happened is funding for in-servicing and teacher preparation is cut. So when you hear me talking about the Oregon Geographic Alliance or the Classroom Law Project or Oregon Council for Social Studies, those are people who give up their weekends, their evenings, their summers, vacation time to do it because they have a passion and an interest. They aren't reimbursed. Mm-hmm. And so within the schools and school districts, there's minimal preparation. I'm sure there's encouragement to do that, but like everything with the passion, there's not enough time or money.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I did recently was, actually it was last
2 weeks ago. I have my classes, or three-week class on campus on Fridays, and so two Fridays ago, I had the old blue books, because you can teachers can get the old blue books, and so I had some blue books, and I handed them out to each one of the students, student teachers, and they were flipping through them, and I said, okay, I realize that the governor has changed since 2004 and 2005 and 2006. It was really cute, because they argued over the count of the cover, because one's got a gorgeous red barn, and the other one has Silver Falls on the front, so I was trying to push that one. There weren't very many of them left. But when we were all finished with that, I said, you know, your counties haven't changed, and then there's new population census out there, connection to a population connection that the Census Bureau, the United States Census Bureau, has put out. Great lesson plans, K-12, for that. So they were flipping through all this, and they came back last week, and they said, I had no idea. And out of the 14 that I'm supervising right now, there's only two of them that were born out of the state. But they're young. They're 22, 23, 24-year-olds, except for one alternative student that came back. She's 54. But and she was saying the same thing, is that we were saying the same thing, or finding the same thing, is that our students, our new students that have come through within the last 10 years, No Child Left Behind, all those kinds of things, that they're not, their education isn't there. One of the 9 essential skills is global citizenship. And you can't have global citizenship if you don't have citizenship of your own state, your own county, your own city first.
But I also think, to answer both of your questions, that because there is no time or money, that we have civic responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And I think encouraging not just the teachers, but our neighbors, our children, to listen to him talking about taking his child, mm-hmm. That is what we have to do. At the middle school level, I'm sorry to say, one of the things that I often hear is, I'm done with him. You know, he's yours. And that's not what we can accept. We have to get back to that community raises a child. And so we have to come and testify here. We have to write newspaper articles. We have to give of our time. We have to encourage fiscal responsibility. So it's a tough job that we all have, but we can't give up on it because it's tough.
Senator Steiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Rouse, actually, one of my 3 brand-new daughters is a new 7th grader at West Sylvan, but she's in Mr. Quinn's class.
Excellent.
Social studies. And one of my other daughters was on the state championship mock trial team through the Classroom Law Project.
Excellent.
Last year. So the question I would ask for you is sort of a follow-on to Senator Haas's question, which is this. Several of you made reference to an integrated curriculum that was developed through Portland Public Schools. Are there the resources to really truly develop that curriculum? Do you think that will serve to, I mean, personally, I'm in favor of lifelong learning and additive learning and integrated curricula. Do you think that will accomplish what the intent of this bill?
The curriculum that was developed, its specific purpose is to talk about the stories that have been excluded from the traditional teaching of Oregon history. So it's the story of racism and exclusion in Oregon, which is, so it has a very specific focus. And it is a curriculum that has been fully developed, and the district has spent the money to train every 8th grade teacher in how to use the curriculum. So we all had a day-long training for how to open up a classroom for even having those kinds of discussions, so that we can look at a history without feeling being immersed in guilt, but helping the students look at this is what where we were and how we can overcome it and move forward and what we et cetera. So the curriculum has been developed. I think in my written testimony, it has the specific title of it, which you can. It's searchable, and the organization is Unlearning Racism. So I think that they could expand the curriculum beyond just Portland Public Schools. I believe that our district contracted with them for the training for it.
Follow up, if I could, Mr. Chair, really quickly. You know, the other big bill, the biggest bill perhaps that this committee has heard this session is Senate Bill 1581, the Oregon Education Investment Board's bill, which I'm sure you all are familiar with. One of the questions that I've asked repeatedly during testimony on that bill is,
how will these things be shared between districts? How will best practices be shared? Obviously, Portland Public Schools has invested a substantial amount of time and money to get this curriculum going, but are there plans in place to share this with other school districts to help them not have to reinvent the wheel or to find out what other schools have already developed curricula on other aspects of Oregon history that could be integrated in the same way you're doing this?
Yeah, as an eighth grade teacher, I'm not privy to that information. But members of the board, I'm sure, would be more able to answer that question. I do know that even within a district, though, training of sharing resources within a large district like Portland Public Schools was difficult before, but now in the last year, they cut almost all what we call TOSAs, teacher on special assignments, and those were the teachers that were specifically assigned to help with social studies instruction and to bring social studies teachers together to share best practices and to do in-services, and that was on the chopping block last year, and it's absolutely because of the budget cuts. There's no question that that's what it was about. I can't imagine that a conversation is going beyond Portland Public Schools unless I cannot speak directly.
One way that sometimes those pieces of information and those curriculums that have been developed by different schools was made public to teachers was during that October in-service day. And schools were supportive of that in-service day, and we'd have Classroom Law would come, and Oregon Geographic Alliance would come, and we would be able to distribute all of the information and all those curriculums that they had done. And usually they have free access because they've even been developed through grants or a school district, so you don't even have to pay very much for them. Well, that in-service day has watered down to it's a day, but it's not supported because of money cuts to districts for the teachers to actually attend. So sometimes it's become a furlough day, non-pay, and then also it might be you can go at your own expense depending on, you can't get Eastern Oregon folks to come over to the Willamette Valley because it's expensive. They have to spend the night. They have to
Many schools, like Salem School District, often does their own in-servicing that relates to site councils and things like that. But I, again, refer back to the social science standards. It's there. And there is lots of creative teaching going on, but we just have to keep the heat on and make sure it's being done.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for what you do and what you have done. I know we ask teachers to do a lot, and I know you appreciate it when we don't give you no more money and ask you to do even more. We have, this isn't the only issue we have had in years past, bills to do more financial literacy. Senator Bonamici had more civics in schools, and so, and I know you're trying to balance it, and so thank you for weighing in on the subject.
Thank you.
Okay, and please, wherever you can, encourage more field trips to the Oregon Capitol. I know that's an issue now because of transportation. A lot of those trips have been canceled. Mm-hmm. It's been cut all over the place, especially in Beaverton. Mm-hmm. And I have heard from adults who say, I remember going to the Oregon State Capitol in fourth grade or seventh grade or whenever. And it's an especially important trip.
And as your state senator, or more accurately, West Sylvan state senator,
yes.
If you'd like me to come speak to your class at some point, let me know.
Thank you very much. I will take you up on that, as Senator Bonamici did a few times as well. Thank you.
I'd be more than happy to.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to be heard on Senate Bill 1554? All right. Well, we're going to close the public hearing, and we will carry this over until Wednesday. Okay? And if we don't have any other business before us, we're going to adjourn.